The Washington Parish Free Fair is known as the largest free fair in the United States. In other words, they don't charge admission. Now, there's no way to keep an accurate toll of how many people come through, but generally speaking, in 4 days of the fair, it will probably average about 200,000, maybe more in some years. If they were charging attendance and there was a gate, you know, you'd know exactly how many people, so they have to estimate, but it is a huge number. I know you walk through the main thoroughfare of the fair, and it's so crowded. As the old people used to say, you couldn't stir them with a stick. It's just, you're just wall-to-wall people. In a way, it reminds me of Mardi Gras, one of those special holidays and festival times. At fair time, school lets out during the fair days, so it's just it's an institution. It's part of community life. For someone who has never visited the Washington Parish Free Fair before, if I could only recommend one thing to do, one thing to see, every time I would say go to the Mile Branch Settlement. And that's the historic settlement that houses the old homes, grist mill, post office, church. They make lye soap. They render the fat to make cracklings, roasted peanuts, any kind of activity from those former times. And each house has been donated by one of the parish families. And those are maintained by volunteers at fair time. So everyone has either a working exhibit or they have ladies sitting in the homes to describe the history of it and who lived there and way of life at that time and answer any questions. So it's a wonderful living experience of former times. And the thing I've loved doing myself, this will be my 27th year as a volunteer, I cook in the Ben's Ford kitchen. It's a log cabin kitchen behind the Jones cabin, and it has a wood-burning stove in it, and I've cooked on that for years and years. That'd be the 27th year, and I love all the people that come through. I think the most rewarding part is our school groups that come through. School children come through, and they now give them sheets where they have to ask questions. What's the fuel source for the stove, or just how were the cabins lit? What was their water source? Things that today's world nobody thinks about. But they had to go out to the well, the pump, and get that. What were the beverages they drank? They learned about sassafras tea, things of that nature. Then they see food being cooked on a stove. You open up the firebox and they can see the fire actually burning in there. See those children with their mouths wide open looking at that and wondering, taking pictures. Sometimes I take for granted being around that for so many years. You say, well, everybody must know about this, but you'd be surprised how many people that come through, many, many people that come through for the first time, that's their first experience looking at a wood-burning stove. Or going down to the crackling pen, seeing those big fires under the kettles, seeing Lewis down there stirring those chunks of fat up, the lard, making that lard, rendering that out, and then the cracklings that are pressed out after that. It's quite an experience. Lye soap. Many people don't realize what type of soap they use in the old days. The lye soap was the soap. But there are exhibitions and demonstrations in every area of that. Then you go further down, there's the cane mill. You have the mule turning the press. They're pressing out the cane juice. You have the evaporator and the fire under it. That's all being cooked out for syrup. So it's a great experience to learn what life was like in former times. And it's a great place to meet people, too. I would call it the heart and soul of the fair. Now, children, of course, love the midway and their rides, and that's great. There's plenty of that as well. But for a lot of your older generations, and even increasingly so, the younger ones, too, that Mile Branch Settlement is the heart and soul of the fair. You have the fiddlers on the front porch, singers. It's a great time in general. It's also what I would call a giant family reunion. Even for people that live in the parish, there's many who will only see one another one time. That's during the fair. Even someone that lives there in that area. And for me, of course, it's a huge family reunion. That's my time to be there. But people sit around on the front porches and reminisce about the old days and times. And I think one thing that's so important is preserving as much as we can. Since I started 27 years ago, I think of all the old people that are no longer there, gone. Just a tremendous number that have passed on since that time. So I become more and more aware of how important it is to record these stories and histories while they're still there to be done. Since I began recording stories down in Washington Parish in the very early days, the early beginnings, I wasn't thinking of it in terms of writing a book or even doing anything special with it. I would hear something. I'd hear a unique word or a term or phrase along with a story. And I think, gosh, I've got to get this down while I can remember it. In the beginning, I was just fascinated with the recording just that. So I would have these tiny little notebooks, those little spiral things you can get in the five and dime, you know, just to carry in the pocket. And I would just write that, jot down notes in that. As time went on, I got more interested in doing artwork, drawing. And fast forward down to present times, I now use those moleskin books, which are very, very good for drawing and recording, making notes. So I have them filled with stories, drawings, phrases, just anything that comes up at all. I record in there recipes, too. I've always tried to write down recipes over the years, things that I've had from the old-time cooks. Those have always been very important. But coming down through the years, I got more and more interested. Then I thought, well, you know, maybe someday I could do a book with this, something that would that preserve these things. If I had one big regret, is would be that I didn't start 60 years ago or more to record these things when there were so many more of those old people around that really went far back in time. However, I've done the best I can with what I have. But Selden Lang would be he's been a great bridge between the generations. I think about the stories he's told me. He was born in 1912, and so many of the stories that he's passed on to me have been about people that he never even saw or knew. So you can imagine how far back that goes. That goes back to days of the 1860s when the war was still going on, to former times that are just totally forgotten except for those old people that passed the knowledge of that down. So I was very, very fortunate to be able to have sources like that I could record. And I don't know how much longer there'll be anyone around that remembers that. Also, something that's so important to me is the language. That language is being lost so fast. When I say language, I'm talking about the older examples. Now, Mr. Arlie O'Brien would be the perfect example of that. In fact, he's the only one that I've found. I'm not saying there aren't others. I'm sure there are. But he's the only one I know that still uses a lot of those old terms, which are pure Elizabethan English, with other things thrown in, too. There's a lot of the backwoods speech and the old way of pronouncing words, different words, things that are no longer in use today. And I wonder just how much longer any of that will be around. That's one of the things that is so important to me, as much as the stories are, which are very, very important, but also recording that speech. And I hope to get it all while I can. I think you get that in life. Places you travel and you come to maybe a town or you see some people and you say, I'm supposed to be here, or I'm supposed to know you. I've seen faces like that. Did that with Selden Lang and Mr. Arlie O'Brien, Homer Graves, and Calvin Weiss, any number of people I've known over the years. I'd take one look at those people and say, I'm supposed to know you. There's a story here, and I'm supposed to be part of it, or at least record it. And the same with the landscapes. There's the human aspect of talking to people, literally getting stories, but then there's the landscape, which tells its own story. You sit down in front of a landscape, you don't have to sit there very long before it tells you the story. Gives you the sense of place, the mood it creates, the lighting on it, late afternoon lighting on the big yellow pines and live oaks. It just creates a magical mood. I'm very often reminded of the Dutch school of landscape painting from Rembrandt's time and a lot of those early landscape painters. They were capturing moments, sometimes seconds in time, where that lighting hits a tree at the very top of it after a big rain shower. The lighting comes out and illuminates that just for a few seconds, capturing that that special moment. It only lasts for a little while. And when the sun's going down, you get that golden ochre color on the trunks of the trees and the tops of the trees. And I'm always trying to capture that before it's gone. So I've got to capture this right now. It's not going to be here but a few seconds. And it's the same with writing down the stories of these people. It's the same way. I've got to get your story right now. It may not come around again. I remember one time Homer Graves said, "Son, we never know but what we may not pass this way no more again." Talking to someone or hearing something. If you hear it, you better get it now. Or if you see that beautiful scene, get it now. Don't put off till tomorrow.